And welcome to Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, yeah.
Well, we're off to a good start.
Well, you got to get it out of the way. You know, I've been on these controls for days. I haven't moved, so that's all I've done. I've been here since the election, because we were here such a long time. It's like we never left.
Yes,
anyway. I'm trying to recover there. I don't know if I did, but anyway.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast version from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we will give the election one final go and talk about the fallout from Campaign 2015 and what we can expect in the days and weeks to come. We will look at the two major opposition parties and ponder their immediate future. Who will fill Harper's big shoes, and is Mulcair likely to stick around? Then we will consider the Guelph race, Lloyd Longfield's decisive victory, and the high voter turnout here in the Royal City. We will also look at how and why the typically lefty Guelph kind of ignored both the lefty parties. And finally, we will look at the lengthy list of election promises that Prime Minister-designate Justin Trudeau has made, what he'll do first, and whether he can get it all done in the next 4 years. And first, though, we will be talking about the winning Trudeau campaign and how the guy everyone kind of wrote off as an empty shirt in the beginning ended up becoming the 23rd Prime Minister of Canada.
Oh, but what a lovely empty shirt, though, eh? No.
Well, that was the message.
That's probably been the most annoying talk of the week. I mean, I know he's handsome, and I know his wife's beautiful, but come on, guys. Like, that's all you got.
To be fair, a lot of that came from foreign media.
That's true, because they revel in that kind of thing, right? And we don't. No, we do. But, no, I got to tell you, 15 years ago, it was right about now, actually, the day of his dad's funeral, and Justin Trudeau was delivering the eulogy. I was sitting in a truck in a cornfield. That's a whole nother story. But we were eating lunch, and somebody in the van said, "Oh, so do you think he'll ever be prime minister?" And I was like, "No, there's no way." So if you're out there listening there, Hank, it came true. He's prime minister. I wouldn't say super shocking to me, but... the amount of the drubbing was definitely a bit of a shock. Yeah. And the fact that the third party came back, that's never happened, has it?
I think it's happened once before. I can't remember
when. A third party that was half a mile back?
I don't know. I don't know the severity.
I
don't know the severity, but it has happened once before. I think it happened in 48.
Of 48. How we forget.
I'm not John Dickerson-like in a complete... photo memory realization of political history in this country.
Or Christopher, we should get him on. He's probably listening.
Yeah, it's like...
Christopher, which election was that? Give us a call. 509? No, I'm kidding.
Give us a call from the other
room. Give us a call from the other room. What do you think?
Yeah, I want to take a victory lap because I remember in the Gang of 4 days being like the sole kind of defender of Trudeau, and it wasn't so much. I don't think it wasn't so much on my part. I was defending Trudeau so much as I don't know how to put this delicately, so I'll just put it: the old people didn't get it. And I think
the old stock.
I'm not going to use the old term old stock.
I think two or three of the old stock voted for him. Hazel voted for him.
Well,
or,
we know
sorry,
Hazel did.
His party.
Yes. There was signs, I think, this was coming. And it sort of reflected in the high voter turnout. Almost 70% of Canadian voters came out to vote, which is a substantial increase over the last election. It seemed to be being driven in large part by younger people, and we can't discount as well the sheer force of anti-Harper sentiment, which is sort of coming out. We're sort of hearing about more and more, even from people in his own party, when we'll get to that later. But I think John Moore put it best in an op-ed he wrote for the National Post, where he said that Trudeau was the candidate that failed to fail. All these logs... And things meant to trip him up. Some of them he launched himself were strewn about the trail in front of him. But he was kind of Teflon. Nothing really stuck to him in terms of the things that should have stuck to him. Things like, oh, I'm going to balance the budget. No, now we're going to run deficits. you know, things like that.
I think we almost expect that from the liberals. well, in the past, it's been that way. But yeah, it's, you know, was the vote, is everybody just sick of Harper, or is it we really love Trudeau that much? I think it's actually a bit of both, really. Like, there's a completely different tone with the guy has come. Even the past couple of days, a couple of news media reported on the fact that the National Press Theater was essentially closed under Harper's regime, and I do not hesitate to call it the regime. Last appearance of Harper there was 2008, so I'm sure they were vacuuming madly and trying to find the flags and dust them off for the press conference that he had.
Well, I think other government groups have used it.
No, other government groups, but not specifically not the Prime Minister.
Or members of the government.
Yeah. And Justin Trudeau's first comment out of the gate was it sort of recognizes the important role that the media fills. This is a completely different light. I mean, it's almost as if a weight has kind of lifted.
Mm.
And also off some conservatives. But we'll talk about, as you said, we'll talk about that later. We're dying to jump to that. So he's going to name a new cabinet on the 4th of November. And I believe he's being sworn in on that day as well. Is that right? So any promises, whatever he's made, even though he's still saying stuff after he's been elected now, he's not the prime minister yet. There's still a bit of time. So,
yeah.
But he's got some big plans, the kid.
Well, it's funny. I've heard a lot about Harper derangement syndrome during the campaign. Mm-hmm. Just the people on the left who are so, hate Harper so much. But there's some Trudeau derangement syndrome out there. I've seen some things on social media, including one post that suggested that everywhere west of Ontario and south of the territory should separate because Trudeau is going to be getting in there and taxing people, and
he's going to take your stuff,
stealing oil and not giving it. And and then there was somebody posted something that they catch from their Facebook that just it was a complete word soup of anti-Trudeau sentiment. And it's early days. I mean, he really hasn't done anything yet.
No.
He has a list of things that he wants to do, or a list of things he's going to say, or he said he's going to do. And that's going to be difficult for him to prioritize things in the days to come. But, you know, looking ahead right now and looking back at the campaign, this really was a campaign of him being underestimated. And
absolutely.
You know, when Corey Tenecki came out and said, he'll be lucky to come out and debate with his pants on. I don't know why I just made Corey Tenecki Texas there. But
because he's kind of Texas. But not Austin. He's kind of Texas-like.
Yeah. He's a,
pew, pew. Kind of Texas.
East Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's he going to do now? Go work for the liberals, probably. No, I don't know.
I am curious. No, but it is strange, and I think one of the things that made the difference for Trudeau, oddly enough, was the debates, his performance in the debates, this ultra-serious, ultra-staid aspect of the electoral process. I mean, yeah, seeing a prime ministerial candidate out there, you know, just throwing himself into the crowds, I think helps a lot. But, you know, when you get to the stage, there's a different level of expectation. And so when he has managed to standing up to Mulcair, especially in the first debate, where Mulcair's like, give me a number, and Trudeau says, nine, that's my number, nine Supreme Court justices say this was on the matter of the Clarity
that
Act.
That was really clever.
Yeah.
So, underestimated, absolutely. I don't think that's the kind of line that can be scripted, you know what I mean?
No.
So, he definitely has hit the bar far higher than anybody thought he would. And also right out the gate, too, he had a phone conversation. It seems like it was a one-hour chat with President Obama, and he's like, we're calling off the CF-18s as soon as possible. And a lot of people are saying, well, that's probably not a bad thing. Not only is he keeping a promise, because that's what they all said about Harper. He keeps his promises. Well, yeah, that's our old stock Canadian voice goes there. He keeps his promises.
A direct quote that Gloria Kovac made last week.
Oh,
too,
there you go.
That she he keeps.
I somehow
his promises.
Turned into her angry old stock photo guy. Sorry, Gloria. But anyway, there's been an amazing turnover. There are 200 rookies from all parties going to be at Parliament Hill. That's massive.
Yeah,
that's more than a majority of freshmen and women, fresh people. freshly hired. And I thought some of the switches were interesting, too, in that 87 seats went liberal from conservative and 56 seats went liberal from NDP. So that's like most of their votes. I can't add very well in my head. It's quite a few. Though,
right? What was it? 87,
56? Anyone?
Anyone.
That's 143.
There you go. Almost a majority is of seats that were taken. Again, I guess that's how it works, but, you know, predominantly from the conservatives. And interestingly enough, the NDP got 8 from the conservatives, and the conservatives got 6 from the NDP. It was almost like they were just sort of trading cards, like, okay, you take these ones, we'll take
these
ones.
And I think some of that came from the redrawing of the ridings, and so you have more concentrated urban areas that aren't necessarily
and people deciding
filled with conservative
where to run.
Voters. Yeah.
But you were talking about a bit about him into the crowds and facing the crowds. There was that interesting footage of him getting out of the limo and people screaming Trudeau. I think it was students at Parliament Hill were like, Trudeau. And he's going in the front door like his like his dad did in that very famous look it up on YouTube, that just watch me. Just put in Trudeau, just watch me. It's possibly one of the most interesting interviews in Canadian political history where the guy just threw the mic in his face.
Yeah, because talk about press access, right? He's just, you know, he's going into the building, the press is right there. And
obviously a bit more security now than there was back in his dad's day. But interesting thing was Harper is still the back door man. They showed Harper coming out like beside the dumpsters in his limo to, you know, the drapes drawn or something. I don't know. So that's the significant difference, I think, in that it's, the openness is definitely there. And the guy's ready and personable to go. And that already is, like I said, it's a bit like the weightlifting.
And he walked to the press theater too. The press theater isn't in the Parliament building. I mean, he walked. It's
down
just
the
down
street.
The street.
And with six guys looking around.
Well, it wasn't like Secret Service. I went to Washington, D.C. when I was 13, and we were doing a tour of the Capitol when George H.W. Bush was on the Hill meeting with congressional leaders. And we were in the rotunda, which is the big circular part between the two houses. I'm explaining this to people who don't know their Capitol Hill architecture, but we were in the rotunda, which is under the dome, and they had everyone move to the side because George H.W. Bush was coming through. And about 12 guys went through, then a couple other guys, then George H.W. Bush, and then about 12
other guys.
Oh, so
you actually saw him?
Yeah, I have a picture.
Oh, there you go.
It's
on film, though, right? It's on.
It was on film, yes, but it came out pretty good.
Not like Zapruder. This is a different kind of film.
No,
there's a political joke.
It wasn't like that at all.
Probably still too
but
soon.
There was to go back to what you're saying about Harper. There was that feeling of being guarded. But you know, to see the Prime Minister designate, like, kind of stroll out of Parliament Hill like anybody else, walking down the street. I mean, granted, there are probably more camera guys around him than RCMP protection.
Yeah, and
it was sort of like watching paparazzi to go back to the whole celebrity factor. But yeah, that's. That's the most striking thing about this, and the fact that he spent the day, the morning after the election, shaking hands at a Montreal subway station. Even Harper on his best morning, which was May 3rd, 2011, would never have done something like that.
No, absolutely not. And I think we're going to see it too. Remember when they used to come, that famous staircase where they come down and there's a microphone there and they just start talking to the media?
Yeah, the scrum.
The scrum was all gone. It was just sort of people flying past and giving really quick answers. I think that's probably going to go too. And of course, being media, we love that. To the numbers, just briefly, I guess, highest turnout since 93, 68.5%, something like that, which is really good. That's significant.
Another interesting year in terms of where we were.
Yes.
9 years after a conservative,
Calabrian as well, wasn't it, 93?
No, it wasn't quite that bad for the conservatives this
year. But this time it was really bad. And it was 73% locally, which
yes,
isn't too shabby. That's a B-minus, so.
And I want to give a couple other numbers, too. 88 women, highest ever elected to Parliament. That's across all parties, Liberal, NDP, Green, obviously, Conservative. 88 female members of Parliament and 10 Aboriginal members of Parliament.
And that's massive, isn't it?
That's the highest ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really big deal. And it goes to, I think it reflects a lot of the turnout, the vote effort that a lot of First Nations groups were trying to achieve, really to get their communities out to vote. So kudos to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so many very small, interesting things have happened adding up to one big kind of like, wow, this is this seems the most significant thing we've seen in a long time, I think. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say completely unexpected, but as those of you that were listening on Monday, we were marveling at the red wave. Yep. The lobster, as it's being called in Nova Scotia, where it just turned red. And it was like, uh-oh.
The lobster was cooked.
Yeah, that's huge. Because in Nova Scotia, it was Megan Leslie, among others, like there were some very popular people given the boot.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Liberal, like NDP, two NDP in particular. So, you know, the wave, they haven't called it the red wave, but the Red Dawn? What is that?
Red Dawn.
Red Dawn 2? I don't know.
I think with all these people talking about conspiracy theories or Justin Trudeau, we don't want to throw around the words Red Dawn, but okay.
Redacted. There you go.
Since we're kind of teetering on the subject, the Harper Conservatives from 166 seats in 2011 down to 99 in 2015. The bigger one, though, is definitely the Mulcair NDP from a high, all-time high of 103 in 2011 to 44 in 2015. Interestingly, though, Harper is the one who seems to be putting his feet in the road, and it seems like Mulcair is going to be sticking it out till 2019.
Yeah, there's no way Harper could. I don't think there's any way either one of them could stay on. But I mean, Harper did the right. I also don't know how he's going to survive as just an MP. That's going to be interesting, because once you've been that high up, I think it's very difficult to take a step back. I mean, you're sort of PM emeritus. But with the amount of control and that we've seen over the past period, the past government, I don't think he's going to be able to, you know, throttle back a bit without some help somehow. But anyway, and of course, as we saw, there was like really strong hints all the way along, even close to the end there, that the Harper brand had completely lost its appeal. That last week there was almost painful to watch. In that sort of, not a schadenfreude kind of way, but it was kind of like, this isn't going to go well, you know? Like, you can see it coming. You've trotted out the Ford brothers? Like, is that all you got, bro? I guess so.
I'm not sure how much the Ford brothers were trotted out, so much as the Ford brothers themselves co-opted things, and they just kind of went with it.
And I saw one report about Rob Ford, possibly. I don't think it was a legitimate news service, but it was like Rob Ford may run.
No, that was a satire.
That was bogus, wasn't it?
That was a satire.
Yeah, see, you need to watch for these things, folks.
I can't remember. It wasn't the Beaverton. It was another satire.
I hate it when they present where it looks legit.
Yeah.
But there's some legit contenders. There was some weird, you're probably following it on Twitter, Michelle Rempel.
Yeah.
Like, not just taking random shots out there. I'm not sure he was answering people, but she referred to herself as the, you know, the 35-year-old chick doesn't do this. And like I'd mentioned about the softening, too, I saw a bit of her the other night on the PNP, and the tone, even from her, was completely different. It's like, I don't have to follow the script anymore. I can just sort of do this thing now. And it was sort of refreshing to see. Same with Lisa Raitt, also potential leadership contender.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing in the last couple of days. I don't think it's broken through the surface yet in terms of what's going on. There was somebody who ran in Rob Anders' old riding and won, the Conservative candidate whose name I can't remember at the top of my mind. But I tweeted out the National Post article he was quoted in, which is basically, you know what, the party leadership really screwed the pooch with those of us who were coming on as new Conservative candidates. We got no support from the National Party. Just, you know, edicts from on high. Jenny Byrne was mentioned prominently, and there's been reports that she was gone by election morning. Her office was packed up, and she was out of a job election day morning. That the last week seemed to
spin Dr.
the last
sacrifice.
Straw.
Eh? You're done.
That was the last straw. Her, like, she couldn't get along with Ray Novak. She couldn't get along with I can't remember his name, but the guy who was running the ground campaign. She just couldn't get along with anyone. She kind of imploded, it sounds like, and her desk was cleared by election day morning. Which is, like, that's crazy. Like, if you know, people remember Jenny Byrne as the person Andrew Prescott called when he got a call from Elections Canada. She was in there.
A point woman.
Exactly. And
fixer too, probably to a degree.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It's like, okay, I'm out of here. Get the banker's boxes.
Yeah, and
you don't need to see me out. I know where the backdoor is.
Yeah, and again, we don't mean it to sound like Schadenfreude, but I mean, this was a machine.
Yeah.
In every way you understand the word machine, everyone knew their function and executed their function to maximum capacity. And to see it fall, you know, kind of fly apart at the gimbals,
it's incredible.
And it's incredible. And the fact that there's reports that say as far back as Labor Day, they knew this wasn't going their way.
Yeah, and when you've got guys like Jeff Norquay, I think he goes by Old Tory on Twitter. You'll see him on occasion. He kind of looks like Mr. Burns. He's definitely no, seriously, he does. No offense, Jeff.
No offense to Mr.
But
Burns.
But he said, and he's a straight shooter, this guy, he said, Harper himself was the biggest issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's significant that somebody that's a veteran, vintage veteran like that is saying things like that.
Well, there are a lot of candidates who are on, who are talking about, and this is in Calgary, of all places, you know, the hometown Harper,
yep.
Going around knocking on doors and people are saying, well, I'm going to vote conservative, but Harper, you know, it's kind of like they were prophesizing the now infamous Globe and Mail endorsement.
Yeah, and those were kind of ridiculous. It's like, well, you know, we'll take the conservatives, but we want rid of Harper. It's like, you know, if he doesn't win, get rid of him. And if this was supposed to be his last campaign, which it was. But, you know, there is a time to do that, right? And it's not like sort of the days before. So people see these things as a complete package. And even though in this country we really don't vote for a leader,
right?
You know, by the system we don't vote for a leader, but in our minds we do, right? Well, we've just talked about Trudeau and Harper and Mulcair for the past whatever. I haven't really talked about the party itself, but that's how it goes. So,
but it will be interesting to watch what happens with the Conservative Party now, because this was the Harper Party. He has been the Conservative Party, basically, since 2003, since he and Peter MacKay co-formed the Conservative Party, Uniting the Right. And then he ran for that party's leadership, and he has been party leader ever since. The 12-year history of the modern Conservative Party is Stephen Harper. And I think there is an interesting story to be told next in terms of those two halves. They've managed to be held together by the glue and the willpower that is Stephen Harper, to his credit, I will say, as a politician and as a leader. But what's going to happen now? Because they're talking about, well, who's going to run? They talk about Lisa Raitt, as you said. Kelly Lynch has been mentioned, another Ontario MP. Tony Clement's been mentioned, although I'm not sure how Tony Clement can...
I think because he's been around.
He's been around, but on the other hand, all you have to do is flash a picture of a gazebo.
Yeah. They've lost their old lions, right? They don't have their people that have been around that long.
Well, apparently,
It is like Lisa Raitt.
Yeah, apparently Peter MacKay is collecting phone numbers too. So there is a
potentiality of Peter MacKay comeback. Kid, eh?
And then there's Jason Kenney on the other side of the country, coming from the other end of it. And people are, and some people in Ottawa who are in the know, at least more in the know than I am, and I'm quoting them, that there is about as much interest in Peter. As much interest in Jason Kenney running as there is no interest in seeing Jason Kenney run, because they know that he is going to run a Conservative Party that is probably not going to appeal where they need to appeal.
Yeah, it's the Reform Wing. I mean, it's the Reform Alliance merger logic or presentation that has been punished here, we'll say, really, because, I mean, that's, you know, he's really... Harper has been the only leader of this party, right?
Yeah.
There's been conservatives and progressive conservatives or whatever, but this is the merged version. He's been the only leader of it. So what direction they go is going to count a lot on who they pick. And I would say the same, too, for the NDP, because Mulcair, even though they said he's going to stick around, I don't think he's going to last that long. I really don't. Like, we won't see him in the next election for sure, which is 2019. But will he last the year? I don't know.
I won't put money on that. I think there is a role for him to play as the guy who, like, gets up and yells at you to fly straight and keep your hands clean. And we're talking about going into a situation, if he leaves, where there's the two main opposition parties are going to be developing new leaders who will need to make their mark and need to develop themselves and need to hold the government to account at the same time. So there is, I think, value in keeping the old dog around if he is interested in staying around. Not to say that Tom LaCare is old or a dog, but
you mean in the political sense, right?
Yeah, because, in the political sense,
because he hasn't been the leader for that long. Right?
No, he hasn't been the leader for that long. And two other things. First of all, he, you know, who might run against him? You know, people like Peggy Nash, Paul Dewar,
who all got the boots.
Who ran, that, yeah, Megan Leslie, yeah. Were people who ran before, not yep. there anymore. And Olivia Chow is not there either. So, you know, it's the bench isn't that deep. The second thing is, insofar as NDP punishing people who don't perform in the clinch, the NDP doesn't really do that. I mean, you look at Andrea Horvath, who ran a very similar campaign in the last provincial election here, where they went too far a center, perhaps too far to the right, some would say.
Mm-hmm. I believe I said that on the yeah. show. Whatever that was.
They didn't lose seats, but they didn't gain seats either.
No, it was completely even, wasn't it? Even with the power
yeah.
play.
And at the same time, they lost whatever power they had in a minority parliament. You know, they lost their leverage. So they're back to the end of the opposition bench. You know, and they could, you know, yell and grit their teeth and do what the NDP does. Interesting, though, Andrea Horvath's still there.
Yep.
And it looks like she's going to be there for the next election. The guys who crafted the campaign, they're not there anymore.
Yep.
But
it's easy to dispose
there.
Of them, right? It's
yeah.
Just like, you're just like, okay, see you later. But
absolutely.
Yeah, and you'd mentioned McKay, too. It'll be interesting if the people that had, you know, have been sent packing, well, McKay actually left.
Yeah.
But if they're going to try and mount a comeback. Because, you know, the defeats were pretty resounding of the people that you had mentioned. And there was an operative of some kind. I'm not sure who had said this, but they did say that the NDP does not eat its leaders. So
I think I read that quote.
Yeah. So it's like they're going to take it a little bit. It's not just you're gone. Duceppe gone, right? So he's
well, Duceppe also removed himself, but he was also a last-minute return as well.
Yep. And up 10 seats, we should mention the block in passing, up 10 seats, but their leader didn't make it, so Duceppe yeah. is finished. But then I don't know if those 10 seats will be of any significance, but that's up from
well, they're in
one?
The same position. Well, it's up from, I think, two, so it's like 400% better.
Mm-hmm.
But
those
at the end of the day,
democracy.
what are they there for? I don't know what they're going to be there for. What, you know, they don't have, again, they don't have a leader. And even if Giuseppe did stick around, he doesn't have a seat. So
will some of them go liberal?
What do they stand
Maybe.
For? Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So that will be interesting to watch. And I'll just say, if you listen to some of our shows from earlier this year, it's like sort of all those high-profile conservatives, Baird, McKay, Moore, sort of jump ship. Mm-hmm. And our posture on our
pensioned off,
yeah, and our pondering if this is something they know something we don't know. I wonder if we have our answer today.
Could be.
Yep. Anyway, we are going to take a break for some music and some PSAs because this is Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be right back.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, 250 watt of community power.
Canadian musical dynamos Splash and Boots have become a favorite of pint-size entertainment connoisseurs, playing the CNE, Treehouse TV, and stages in every corner of the globe. And now they are going to be in your very own backyard at the River Run Center, 35 Woolwich Street, a physically accessible venue, on Sunday, November 8th at 2 p.m. as part of the Guelph Mercury Family Series. Tickets are on sale now at the River Run box office. Call 519-763-3000 or visit riverrun.ca.
Don't need to know you, I don't want to know. Don't need to know you, I don't want to know. Know how you go now, and now I know how. And now I know how, and now you can go. Know what I know now, and now I know how. Don't need to know you, so now you can go. So now you go now, so now you can go. You so and so now, 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 now you can go. Don't need to know you, don't need to know you. Don't want to know you, don't want to know you. So now you go now, so now you can go.
Don't
yeah, that was the dulcet tones of Johnny Rotten, a.k.a. Johnny Lydon, from Public Image Limited, The Pill, or the P-I-L, from their new album, What the World Needs Now, and that was No Now. And yeah, I guess that's not our usual kind of playlist thing, but man,
we have lots of people playlist?
Don't need to go, well, you know. Oh, so, and yeah, you are listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM. And if you have any requests, get them to us. We're going to say our stuff at the end of the show is where you can reach us. If there's, honestly, if there's music that you want to hear, we play the one song thing so we can rest the tonsils. But today it was Public Image. Tomorrow it might be, I don't know, monks chanting.
Next week,
I mean, yeah, I hope not too. So, but anyway, let us know what you think.
Send us your requests or we'll play something you really hate.
You need to know now. They're going to be singing that for the rest of the day. At least you didn't swear.
Yes, luckily.
Whew, they said.
Well, you don't swear when you're doing the same two lines over and over again. Anyway, I wanted to point out quickly an event coming up here in Guelph on Tuesday. Former Prime Minister Joe Clark will be in town. I think he's doing a talk. Well, I know he's doing a talk, but he is. I think it is at Rozanski 100 at 7 p.m.
Sorry, is that the one on the 27th?
Yes.
It's been rescheduled.
Oh, has it?
Because of a funeral.
Oh, no.
Whose funeral was it?
I don't know.
We'll get back to you on that, folks, before the end of the show.
Well, I'm glad you know these things before I redirect people
the
wrong way. We need to know now. But still, I will mention Guelph Film Festival coming up November 5th to 8th. Tickets are available now, so you should go check out that line. There is some good films coming, some good docs. But we are going to talk about Guelph. And as Scotty alluded to earlier, 73% voter turnout for Guelph, which I don't know if it's an all-time high, but certainly higher than it's been in the last couple of elections. We are up 8.5% from 2011, up 14% from 2003, I believe. Like, it's been kind of been going down in the last couple elections. Mm-hmm. 2008 was down 6 points. 2011 was down. It was down slightly 0.1%, but it was still down. So shooting up 8.5% is an incredible achievement. In the end, we're still liberal. Lloyd Longfield is a pretty assured victory too, as a lot of the liberal victories, 49.1%.
Yeah, in fact, some guy named Adam Donaldson was quoted in the Mercury saying it was surprising that a non-incumbent got 50% of the vote. I mean, it is huge. I mean, that's without a doubt, he's the man. So mm-hmm. Has been a liberal riding on and off, mostly on, for the longest time. But 50% for a new guy is big.
I don't know why the Mercury always quotes that guy either.
That guy, Adam, any relation? That was great. You and Tim Mao in the Merc. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's good company.
Didn't mention the show, though. You got to work on that. You know, it's all about... We know where to find you. I know where to find you. But anyway, that was good.
You can Google me. It's out there. Anyway, go
yes.
ahead.
Yes. So
this isn't about me.
You can tell I read the Mercury regularly, devoutly. Yeah, and the something else this Donaldson character is talking about, what I think we should talk about, is the absolute drubbing of the NDP and the Green. I mean, that wasn't just now. Of course, a lot of that was drawn from them to the Liberal for sure, I think, to make certain sure that we got a Liberal in and that Harper Mann, it was time for him to go, as was sung in Guelph several times before the election. So I think people threw their, you know, whatever behind that and said, if we want to get rid of him, we have to do this.
I'm not 100% sure about that because I did compare and contrast the numbers. First of all, there was just 500 votes between Andrew Seagram and Gord Miller. 500. So that's like... That was almost as close as Greg Shirk and City Councilor James Gordon.
Yep.
And when they ran for provincially in 2011,
but those were even percentages with those two, wasn't it? And I guess
they were pretty
close
percentage wise. Yeah,
it was like 20%, whereas this is more like in the tens.
Right, and well, that's because the voter turnout was so high; it makes the number of votes seems percentage wise smaller. But Bobby Stewart, who ran in 2011 for the NDP, got 9,800 votes over Andrew Seagram's 8,300, almost 8,400. Meanwhile, Gord Miller got almost 8,000 votes, 7,900 votes mm-hmm. over John Lawson, who had 3,700 votes.
Which is very good, but...
Well, it's good for him, but my what I'm curious about is, did Longfield campaign draw votes away from those two? Or did the increased turnout make the share bigger for Lloyd? Like, did more people come out specifically to vote for the Liberal and be part of that red wave?
It's probably a bit of both, for sure. And I think Longfield himself said that it was new voters, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, the established voters. But I think in terms of the NDP and Green, you're saying the NDP vote was close. I mean, it's fairly stable.
Yeah.
And of course, the only time we've seen NDP in Guelph was the provincial election 90, when they took the province. But can I say the P word? Greens, mm-hmm. don't run a parachute candidate. You won't win. And Adam has no comment on that. But this is my own personal perspective. Mike Nagy did so well because he's from the area and was established here. Sure. Lloyd Longfield did so well because, I think I said this before, you look at the campaign literature and everything he said, total, like, involved in the community and groups that people didn't even think about day-to-day, yeah. like the Chamber of Commerce and the Poverty Action Committee, which Andrew Seguin was also involved in.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who's involved with what. When you have a CV like that, you're going to do well. Because if people look at nothing else, and if, say, the environment or whatever isn't your key issue, it goes a long way. And obviously it did. The numbers speak for themselves. So
yeah,
Greens get a local person next time, or Elizabeth May. But I love that rumor that Elizabeth May is going to go for the petitions to get her to be the new environment minister, which could happen.
Yeah.
It's not likely, but
wouldn't she have to give up Green Party membership?
No. I don't think you have to be in cabinet.
Hmm.
It's like when there's a war situation, the cabinet is just whoever, right? Hmm. There's only one government. A unity government, they call it, right? It's like, we're one government now.
It'd
be a spin, but I believe you can put anybody in cabinet that's a seated minister. It would be unprecedented.
Right. But
they might make her the speaker.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
She would,
if they made
do
her speaker,
a kick-ass job as speaker.
That would be,
absolutely would.
I would rather see that
the
than
saying,
her being environmental minister.
No, don't do it. But
no, I think
she'd be really good.
I think seeing her as speaker would be a much better use of her talents than putting her in an environment portfolio. Where
absolutely,
because the Liberals are, if not pragmatic, will maybe support some kind of drilling pipeline somewhere at some point. We can, I don't think it's going to be tomorrow.
No.
But, I mean, the oil will bounce back at some point.
Well, they had the guy on the deputy guy. TransCanada, was it? Yes.
Let's just address Gloria Kovac for a minute, because she didn't do as well as Marty Burke did, which I found...
That's surprising. It was surprising.
I found it surprising one way, but not surprising in another way. But she did do better than the number of votes she took in the last time she ran in 2008. It was 17,000 in 2008 and almost 18,500 in 2015.
Yeah, I think if there was a bit of weighting on it, if we weighted the numbers, it probably wouldn't seem as bad. Like, it was like, well, you know, if you take away the massive significant victory for Longfield, then...
But it's interesting because it was the same circumstance. There was no incumbent candidate. In 2008, when she ran last time, it was a much tighter race. Frank Valeri only beat her by 1,000 votes.
Mm-hmm. That was definitely was the election that never ended, part one.
That was the election that never ended, part one. But I do wonder, A, how much... I mean... Just looking at the numbers, it wasn't like all the conservative support just went away. Marty Burke maybe did 1,000 votes better than her.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder, A, how much the anti-Harper wave hurt her, and two, how much robocalls and that black eye hurt her.
Oh, yeah, it was looming. It's funny, it didn't come up a lot. Like, it did in certain circles, and every once in a while it'd be like, robocalls, but it wasn't a wedge issue here.
No.
But yeah, that's the taint would be difficult to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, Pierre, if you're listening, give us a call. We really want to talk to you. Should mention surrounding area, too, friend of the show, Michael Chong, winning his fifth victory in Wellington Halton Hills with 51% of the
votes. Pretty handily.
So he's like, Longfield, but he's the blue color surrounding us. But he's a popular guy, really popular.
I think... They probably have a lot in common, and I will be interested to see what Michael Chong can do now that he doesn't have to be a party man.
That's right. As I said before, the weightlifting. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And, of course, the areas to the west, there was the red sweep.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had the pockets – or, sorry, blue sweep generally. But in the pockets were in the cities, London, Cambridge, Kitchener-Waterloo were red.
Yeah,
and that's where they got their support.
Again, the urban areas.
There was one NDP in London, but it was definitely red tide. And, of course, GTA red tide.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sorry to go past Guelph supporters. And, of course, Lisa Raitt in Halton. Is that Halton Hills? Milton, is that?
Yeah.
Ryan's Milton?
That's her.
So, again, another player, another contender, very popular MP. So, and that is tough to beat, regardless of the party.
Only 8 NDP MPs in Ontario altogether.
Total? I didn't know that it was that low.
8, and then it's mostly concentrated north, obviously, Hamilton, Windsor.
Well, I mean, they lost their Toronto people, right? So that was...
All their Toronto people.
All the Toronto people got drubbed. So that was that.
Well, let's look to the future in our final moments. And we did kind of address this earlier a bit in terms of just the immediate change of style that Trudeau has set. But there's a long, long list of things that people want done, and it's interesting on I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday I got invited to a Facebook event, the initiation of electoral reform, and it was exactly 18 months. It was like April 18, 2017.
The day it's supposed to happen.
Right. Because Trudeau said, we're going to do an 18-month, year-and-a-half, blue ribbon thing where we're going to get everyone together and talk about electoral reform. But this person who set up this Facebook event is like, all right, you have exactly 18 months to make this happen.
Jeez. Or else.
And I've been seeing articles about, like, when are we going to get legalized marijuana? When is this going to happen? And I will give Trudeau credit for looking like a man who is not under pressure, but he's under pressure.
Oh, for sure. Especially in the international, as I mentioned earlier about talking to Obama and pulling out the CF-18s out of combat. And trying to encourage humanitarian support. And, of course, the 25,000 refugees. It's like, okay, how are you going to do that before? He did say the end of the year. I believe that's going to take a little bit longer considering the numbers.
And there's a W5 interview this weekend where he says, yes, it will happen by the end of the year.
And another bone of contention was the famous Bill C-51, the Anti-Terrorism Act. They have said that they're going to have a multi-party joint House of Commons, Senate, consultation process, and that this committee will report to the Prime Minister. Yeah. So that's definitely something new, and we're going to see less. I think we're going to see less omnibus bills, less of that sort of let's ram all this stuff through.
One would hope the thing about this House of Commons Senate committee is that regular parliamentarians are going to be able to get access to high-level security information for the first time. And this kind of information that has in the past only been available to the Prime Minister, despite the fact that you have other countries, the United States, Australia, Britain, who do have provisions where parliamentarians, or in the United States case, people in the congressional offices, can look at this top secret information. Mm-hmm. Canada hasn't had that, and that's sort of mind-blowing when we think of ourselves as a free and liberal place, that people who are representing us in Parliament haven't been able to see information regarding an important issue as security. So I do hope that part of it becomes a reality, and it has been stated that one of the first things they are going to do legislatively is enact these changes to 51.
Yeah, it sounds like one of the changes too is that it's going to have a sunset clause. So I guess if circumstances change, they can say, okay, it's going to run for this period.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they'll have done the projection already as to what's going on in the period, we'll call it, and then I guess there'll be. You can potentially extend it or not, or change the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like it's going to be a far more open process than anything we've seen. And then they did support the initial legislation too, but of course with the intent to do whatever it is that they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if they are getting input from the rest of the rest of the House, then that is a good thing.
Yeah,
for sure. Changing that up as well. I think some of the other things we're going to see too, it's been mentioned about more provincial cooperation.
Right.
I don't know if he owes Kathleen Wynne one, but it Harper met once with all of them.
he met in early 09. He was at a first minister's meeting in early 09.
And he probably couldn't get out of it. So that
well,
was
that
it.
Was about the crash, right?
Yeah.
That was
but
right
then there,
the
at
crash.
One point, there was month. What was it called? The Council of the Federation or whatever. Yeah. Where they had those not monthly, but they met at least once a year, I think.
Yeah.
And that just all drew to a close. So that's something else that we're going to see. And supposedly there's a new Senate process in the pipe. I don't know how that's going to go down. They had said, this is a direct quote, it's going to be open, transparent, and nonpartisan choosing of senators. I don't know how the heck that's going to go. Maybe committee? But it'll be. It sounds like it'll be multi-party, and we'll see less of these, you know, well,
less Duffies.
Name the names, yeah. As we have like thousands of times in the past, the Duffies and the entitled types, even Brazo and I was going to say Chancellor Pamela Wallen, former Chancellor of the UFG. So they're all forgot about now. We will bring them up, though, on occasion.
Well, Duffy trial is starting again very soon. Duffy trial starts up again in November.
Duffy 2, Duffy 4.
This would be Duffy 3.
Duffy 3.
Duffy trial phase 3.
Duffy 3. So.
Well, and then the Wallen trial's got to come up at some point. It's got to start sometime soon. Anyway.
Our show's going to be a law show for a while. We're just going to switch over and talk about. Yeah.
And. Kong. And.
I can't call it the sound effect like I was doing on Monday night, but I will next time we...
Yeah, I mean, this is legislative agenda, the things we're talking about changing 51, and TPP will also have to be addressed soon. I haven't heard anyone mention TPP lately. No, I expect there will be begrudging acceptance of it, sadly, but that hasn't been mentioned at all lately. There's also still the fact the United States has to vote for it, and the United States is always on the brink of shutting down the government for some silly reason or another.
Shut her down.
Yeah.
I'm going to shut her down.
And they also don't have a speaker right now, so.
Oh, anyway. Is that still? Yeah, I didn't realize it was still ongoing.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, Trudeau is going to be going to several international conferences in the weeks to come. There's an APEC summit, there's a Commonwealth summit, and then there's this huge climate change summit in Paris.
And at least he's going this time. They used to just send Leonel Glucart, right, to these conferences.
Well, they would send Leonel Glucart and some oil lobbyists, basically. They wouldn't take anyone from other parties.
Famous talking to the empty room.
Right.
You turn the camera around, it's like crickets.
And it seems like it's not going to be at the Trudeau show that's going. Christy Clark said, BC Premier Christy Clark said she's got her ticket to go. I think there will be several premiers who are going to go. And
Brad Wall probably and...
I imagine, you know, we talked about Elizabeth May. Elizabeth May will probably be allowed to go on the government plane.
This time, yeah, because she used to go on her own, right? Just like pay her own
Everybody
ticket.
Had to go on their own.
Yeah.
I remember in the 2007 conference, Derek Piper with the CSA here went to I think it was, where was it? Was it Rio? It was somewhere in South America. They were having the climate change conference.
Was that Rio 2? Like, there was that Rio, famous Rio 1 when they redid it.
And it was he was with a Canadian student delegation, but they went on their own. There was no room for them on the
big empty plane.
Yeah, and that
we
was
need to put the ping pong when, table on the plane.
Right, that was when Baird was environment minister.
Oh, and I forgot about that.
Yeah,
bad memories. Let's create some good memories, people. Some good political memories.
And of course, there'll be in the next couple of weeks, there'll be a lot of guessing games as to who's going to be in the cabinet, other than Elizabeth May.
Yeah, I saw one today, Chrystia Freeland as the first female finance minister. I think that's entirely possible.
There are a lot of smart candidates for
ready to
finance
go.
Minister.
Yeah.
Melanie Joy might end up. So she was second place in the Montreal mayor's race.
Right.
Jody Wilson-Raybould, who was the BC regional chief of the Aboriginal First Nations, could be an interesting choice for Aboriginal Affairs Minister. I certainly don't think she'll be sitting down when people ask for a
reading
inquiry
the paper
into the Indigenous.
No, I think that's going to happen in some form. That is bound to happen. And this, you've probably heard talk lately about this, you know, the cabinet being formed or whatever, and they make it sound like it's a very last minute thing. You can bet before the election was even run, they sort of parsed every candidate and said, where will they fit if this goes down the way we hope?
Yeah.
It's not as if it's, you know, there probably are some late nights involved, but it's not, you know, there's no need to worry that the cabinet is just like, okay, we'll just put these people in.
Well, and it's going to be
been
a,
well thought out.
It's going to be a smaller cabinet too. It's going to be 25. I think they said it was aiming at 25.
What's the cabinet as a 32? It's pretty high. Wasn't
it? It was 39 the last time Harper shuffled it.
And they were just making stuff up to give people cabinet posts, right?
More or less. I mean, everybody had their own parliamentary secretary, pretty much, and it was a little bit out of control, which is weird because it was a conservative government. Yeah. Anyway.
Wow.
Interesting times.
Absolutely. And, big beds of shredded paper for all of Ottawa's hamsters to lie down on.
Or for the cat sanctuary.
Yes.
Anyway.
excuse me.
It's legit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It is. Cats are good.
We will be here to cover it all. We will be back next week to hopefully talk about some other things going on in the world. We've been ignoring for the last 3 months, and we will come back to it. You can stay connected to us at opensourcesguelph.com. That is our website. Open Sources Newswire is our Facebook page. @OS_Guelph is our Twitter feed, and you can find the Open Sources podcast version of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. You can contact me directly on Twitter @AdamADonaldson, or you can go to my political blog, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, and I will have an interview with Member of Parliament Designate Lloyd Longfield coming up probably sometime next week. And you can stay tuned for that. Scotty, where can people get in touch with you?
Scotty Hertz on Twitter, also on Facebook. Same thing, Scotty Hertz. I won't spell it out like the other night. Speaking of the other night, we have yet to give away the prizes. We will work on that. We haven't had time to reconvene, but be patient, folks. There are winners out there, and thank you for participating in our contest. And where else you can find me? Oh, scottyhertz@bell.net, the direct line. So give me. Oh, and just to mention, the Joe Clark lecture is being rescheduled because Ken Taylor's funeral is that day. And of course, as we know, Joe Clark, I believe he was prime minister when that happened, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to that. It will be rescheduled for a later date, so stay tuned. We'll let you know that later date is, but I only know that because I look at the UG website every day.
It's your homepage.
If you want to find things out, just go there.
It's your homepage. You can
pretty much.
Stay tuned now for DJ Sam's Good to Me at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back here next week with more Open Sources Thursday at 5 p.m. And we will get you up to date now with some news courtesy of Al Jazeera. We'll see you next time.